You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
This interview with Deborah Watts was conducted in July of 2020. This is an encore presentation. We hope you had a chance to listen to A Letter from Heaven to America from Emmett Till, which is episode 15 of Destination Freedom. Next up on The Eclectic, it's produced and hosted by Donnie L. Betts of No Credits Production, LLC. Fresh for your ears, Tell Everybody, the new podcast from the producers of Destination Freedom Black Radio Days, comes The Eclectic. Interviews with difference makers, artists, authors, bold thinkers, people we love who get stuff done. We hope you enjoy this special interview with the co-founder of the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation is his cousin, Deborah Watts. On August 28, 1955, the body of 14-year-old Emmett Till was discovered in the muddy waters of the Tallahatchie River in Mississippi. Till's body had been dumped there by two men who later confessed to his killing. He had been beaten to death savagely for many hours. Now, Emmett's murder was just one of 4,000 lynchings that stained the soul of America from 1870 until 1950. What made this different was the insistence of his mother, that brave soul, Mamie Till, that said his body must be brought back from Mississippi to Chicago, where it was displayed in an open casket for all the world to see what these men had done to her son. That image would help spark the Southern Freedom Movement, also known as the Civil Rights Movement. Till would have turned 79 on July 25, 2020, and August 28, 2020. It would be 65 years since that murder. Joining me today to speak about the ongoing push for justice for Emmett Till is his cousin, Deborah Watts, co-founder and executive director of the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation out of Stone Mountain, Georgia. Welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So let's first start with this, as I described earlier, a push for justice for Emmett Till. What are you and the foundation doing to make this happen?
Well, we are, I would say, pounding on the drums right now and asking the public, Congress, and others to join us in this push for justice. It's a 65-year-old murder case that, as you mentioned, the perpetrators or the murderers were found not guilty. And we know that that was total miscarriage of justice. And so we're asking the public to join us in making sure that at least the known accomplice that is still alive is brought to justice, and that's Carolyn Bryant Donham. She is in her 80s and has never really answered to any questions, particularly from the public or reporters or others, but she told her story to her husband, and she told her story to a jury. And that is what began the wheels turning and led to Emmett Till's death. And so her recollection, her story, her lie, if you will, is why she needs to be held accountable for Emmett's murder. She was a central part of his demise. Absolutely. And represented such a time back in the 1950s, which, of course, we're seeing something similar happening today. So that model is being repeated, and we need it stopped. So we are at this point asking the public to join us in a petition. We have a petition campaign that is being launched, and it is asking for the murder charges to be filed against Carolyn Bryant Donham. We know that the responsibility and the powers that be, it's held in the hands of the local authorities and those that have jurisdictional authority in Mississippi. And that would be the Attorney General, Lynn Fitch, along with the district attorney in the area that's holding the case, as we finally know, and that is Dwayne Richardson, DA, district attorney in that area. The case is a reactivated open murder case that is still on the list of cases, cold cases, unsolved cases that the Department of Justice has a report that they issue every year, and it's still showing open murder case. So we know that the FBI has been involved. We know that they have done an investigation, or at least they have indicated they've done an investigation or still doing an investigation. We're not sure why it's taken this long. So we are urging, you know, the public to help us to help them bring this to closure. Bring the case to closure, file charges, have an indictment against Carolyn Bryant Donham, and finally have some form and sense of justice that I believe is owed to our family. It's owed also to the public and actually the world. We have received calls from people in Europe and other places that are counting on us doing our part. And so this time it's our family that is, and the foundation is leading the effort. And I must say, Mr. Betts, that I'm a cousin of Emmett. Our great-grandfathers were brothers. And so this effort, wearing two hats, you know, one of which with the foundation, the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation. And, you know, that was as a promise to Emmett's mother that we would keep fighting for justice. We would make sure that his death is not in vain and that people would remember him. And they would also understand what the legacy is about. And so we're trying to, you know, to make sure that that's all intact as well. So this is wrapped up with, you know, family, with our foundation leading the effort, and with activists, supporters, and others that are counting on the Department of Justice, along with the local jurisdictional authorities, to right the wrongs, to do their part, and to bring those that are known accomplices, and the one that we know is Carolyn Bryant Donham, but bring that person to justice.
And we know that she, like you said, she's still alive, and she still will not speak anymore. She spoke once. She's not speaking anymore about the case. And we know that the case will reopen. Now, I'm confused about this. Reopened in 2010 and then reopened again as recently as 2017 by the FBI. Now, these two different investigations, the FBI and the Department of Justice, and as you mentioned, the district attorney and attorney general there in Mississippi, are these all three separate investigations, or are they all collaborating with each other?
What happened, you know, in 2007, I believe, there were activists, Alvin Sykes, along with a filmmaker, Keith Beauchamp,
yes,
who petitioned, along with cousin Simeon Wright, who actually was a witness to Emmett's kidnapping.
Yes, he was.
They were able to get the Department of Justice, along with Congress's, you know, support, John Lewis and others, to support an act called the Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act. And that called for cold cases to be investigated, of a full accounting brought to families, the truth and justice for those perpetrators that were still alive. Now, many of those cases were, you know, cases from, you know, the civil rights era. And unfortunately, many of the perpetrators are no longer with us. And so, but it did give some semblance of truth and some semblance of justice to some families. Emmett's case, though, was actually reopened and reinvestigated with his body being exhumed in 2005. And that was subsequently, I don't want to say closed, because murder cases, you know, until they're solved aren't closed, but they decided there was no true bill. That was in 2007. And with new investigations and with the revelation that Carolyn Bryant indicated, and I, you know, people are saying she recanted her story, and this was based on a book that was written by Timothy Tyson.
Yes,
that's what started this firestorm, if you will, in 2017, when he revealed that he had spoken to her, and I believe it was around 2000. 2009 that he had spoken to her about the case. And she indicated at that time to him, supposedly, that she, you know, that the things that she said that he did, he didn't do. So that piqued the interest of the FBI, the Department of Justice, and the case was revisited, if you will. And at the same time, we were getting the reauthorization of the Emmett Till Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act because it was due to sunset in 2017. So in 2016, President Obama was able to sign that act, and it's reactivated. It's back in place, and it is to look at unsolved cold cases now through 40s through, I believe it's 1979. The first act, which I would call Till Bill 1, was to investigate cases through 1969. With the reauthorization, they extended it another 10 years. So now cases that, and we have some that we were aware of that needed to have attention, like the Atlanta Five, who actually, there were five men that went fishing from Atlanta to Pensacola, and they came back, or they didn't come back alive, if you will. So that case happened, I believe, in 1976. So with the reauthorization of the Unsolved Civil Rights Crimes Act, there is a report that has to be issued each year based on what the findings are from the Department of Justice with their investigation. What happens with that, Donnie, is that, or Mr. Bitts,
what happens with that,
when the cases are investigated, they turn it over to the local authorities. So the Department of Justice, at the highest level, you know, the United States, the law enforcement there, they provide some assistance. But where the jurisdictions are, you know, where local authorities, whether it's in the state, the county, or in a particular city, they, you know, because most of the statute of limitations for some of these cases, they don't have federal jurisdiction, but they agree to help with the investigation. That's the same thing here in Emmett Till's case. So they would, under normal circumstances, turn their investigation over to the local authorities. And that's where we sit today, that we don't know what was a part of their investigation. We assume that it has to be their findings with Timothy Tyson's book, what he wrote, what Carolyn Bryant admitted to or didn't admit to. And then also she indicated, or he indicated, that there was a there were memoirs that she was actually writing, and he agreed to have those held until 2036. So, of course, you know, with everyone hearing that, we're wondering, okay, what's inside of those memoirs?
Right.
You know,
right.
What information is there that we need to know? So I'm hoping that with the reinvestigation or the revisiting of the case, that they were able to acquire that information. They were able to talk to Timothy Tyson, and I'm hoping they were able to talk to Carolyn Bryant. But with investigations like this, we never really know the truth, or we don't know the process, because it's an open investigation.
Right.
So we're hoping that that with our push, that you know, we're, of course, we're making some assumptions, and we do know that some of our family members have been given some updates, but they have not been given any updates since, I believe, like 2018. So it's time, you know, it's
yes,
time. And so we're just asking for the update. We don't know what it entails, but we really want to help the public to help us push for that kind of closure. And we're hoping, too, that with the information that they have, that they will find, and that they're finding the association of Carolyn Bryant being an accomplice in the murder of Emmett Till.
Well, she would be complicit because her actions and her words led to all the actions of her husband and also of his, was it his cousin? So J.W. Milam and Roy Bryant were the two perpetrators of this murder. There may have been other people involved against their will. I had a conversation with the mayor of Glendora, Mississippi, who has always said that he thought he felt his father may be involved against his will because he worked for the Bryants. So that that may or may not be true, but we do know for sure because they confessed, and after a 67-minute trial, they were found not guilty, and then they were able to benefit by an article that they wrote for, and paid $3,000 for that, whereas the family of Emmett Till, yourself included, has not gotten justice nor received 1 cent of any kind of compensation for this murder or anything like that. So I just wanted the public to be aware of that. You brought up this amazing woman at the beginning of the conversation. That's Mamie Till Mobley. And that I want you to be able to really tell people about her as much as you can remember. It's always interesting to me when we talk about Emmett Till because our mother's name was Mamie as well. So it's like something in my heart that always tells me that I need to keep talking about this case in particular. Here in Colorado, where you're speaking to me from, of course, right now we are hashtag justice for Elijah McClain. So these, as you said, men, women, and children are still being murdered here in America without any kind of justice for the families in particular, as we go to this trauma of trying to get justice for these individuals. But please speak to us about Mamie.
Yes, I'm delighted to do that. She is my shero. You know, my great-grandfather and Emmett's great-grandfather were brothers. Joe Smith was my great-grandfather, and Emmett's was George Smith. And my great-grandfather lived to be about 97, and so he was one of the oldest favorite uncles that was still alive. Mm. And he had so much, there was so much respect for him with other family members that they would visit often. And that would include Emmett's grandmother, Alma Spearman, and his mother. And so I had the fortunate opportunity of being in an extended family living with my great-grandfather at the time when he migrated from Mississippi to Omaha, Nebraska. And so with that, I had a chance to just hear them, how they loved up on him, and then how they were about their business of their faith with the Church of God in Christ. You know, many times they were there helping to spread the word, to, you know, encourage other units growing, you know, in their faith, and then starting, you know, churches as well. So that was always, you know, a visit to my great-grandfather, and then they were about their business, you know, moving forward. But at reunions, I oftentimes spent time talking to Mamie. And, you know, she, when I think about her, you know, she started this, if you will, this public outcry. But again, when you think in 1955, such a brave soul, courageous, and starting this unwelcome, unwanted club, if you will, of mothers who had to find the kind of courage, their voice, their faith. They used everything that they had to try to get some support for and justice for the loss of their sons and daughters' stolen lives. Yes. So Mamie provides that, I think, that model of grace and dignity and class through her grief. And so I think me, along with so many others, we just respect her for that. We probably would not handle a similar situation the way that she handled it, but she provided that kind of a model. But this was a very intelligent woman, very, I think, determined, just in her, even in her early years, you know, to get her education, but also to be obedient to her mother. Her mother had a pretty strong, I'd say she had pretty strong influence over her. So everything had to be approved by Mama Spearman. And Mimi was very obedient to that. And that happened before Emmett was born and even after Emmett was born.
I read where she didn't want her to get married to Emmett's father.
Yeah, she, you know, but of course, you know, think in those early 40s. And, you know, she had, you know, dreams and hopes for her as well.
Yes.
But there was a lot. I mean, it would take, you know, I should write a book. I am author of a book called 101 Ways to Know You're Black in Corporate America, of which I should say Nene wrote the foreword of my book.
Okay.
And so as we move forward with our relationship, you know, she, of course, respected my work and, you know, my, I guess, matriculation through corporate America. But we found ourselves connected in a way, because as the dreams and hopes were, I'd say, destroyed with racism by many of those that were smart and brilliant individuals, willing to play the game, willing to make sure that they did all the right things in corporate, you know, their 250% still wasn't enough,
right,
you know, giving 250%. So she compared that with Emmett, you know, not having an opportunity to have his hopes and dreams realized, you know, at age 14. So, but a very determined woman, very, I would say, you know, she battled this. I don't want to say alone, but we were pretty much like spectators watching her interview, her interview with Jet Magazine and with other publications, with speaking at podiums, you know, NAACP and other places across the country, and churches, and just trying to share Emmett's story, but then also, you know, connecting with some of the issues that African Americans were facing, with unemployment, with violence and racism and other things. So she's a model, a role model, definitely a role model for me, and I think for a lot of women. And she was just determined, though, that we would remember Emmett. And I tell you, I had to promise that I would do whatever I could after I left corporate America, that I would do everything that I could to try to make sure that people would not forget Emmett.
Well, I know that she's looking down on you and smiling and just keeping a part in the work that you are doing, the legacy and the rest of the family to do that. Let's talk about some of the events that you have planned for, not only for Emmett's birthday, for July 25th. He would have been 79 years old. And also August 28th, was his 65th anniversary of his murder. The foundation is doing a lot of amazing things. Can you share with the public just a little bit what some of the things you're doing?
Yes. On July 25th, we start with a global notice. It's a time for unity in black and white. And we started this several years ago, where we're asking the public to join us in a silent yet powerful protest against racism, hate, violence, and now we've added police brutality. And what we've asked the public to do is wear black and white all day that day, take a photo of themselves, post it on social media, send it to us as well. And it's a statement, you know, that just says, you know, enough is enough. You know, we need to say the names of all of those that who had their lives stolen. And then we also need to pause for just a moment of silence, just to give them that kind of respect. And we ask people to do that at 12 noon, wherever they are in the world. You know, I think people would be surprised that in Minnesota, there's like 400 or so cases and names and people that have lost their lives to police, or have been victims of police brutality in Minnesota. I believe they started recording those names in 1984, and they ended it with the names like George Floyd in 2020, Joshua Ostwisky, Ronald Davis in 2019, Brian Quinones, and then others that there's 400. I'm just looking at a poster with four columns, really small font size and print, and it's filled with the names.
Social media handles so they can reach out to you?
Oh, wonderful. Yes. Well, we are on Facebook at Emmett Till Legacy Foundation. We're on Twitter. And with the support of some of our celebrities, we have grown from like, 3,000 to maybe 36,000, 37,000. Mm-hmm. Tay Diggs, thanks to him, who sort of adopted us, actor
okay.
Tay Diggs.
Beautiful.
And that's at Emmett Till. It's real simple, EmmettTill. And then we have Instagram at Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, along with our website. It's EmmettTillLegacyFoundation.com.
Well, Deborah Watts, I can't thank you enough for being with us to tell us more about the Emmett Till Legacy Foundation, to share your personal recollection of Mamie Till, which I say is one of my heroes as well, sharing that mutual name of mothers, and also the fact that Emmett was calling for her as he was being beaten, as so many recorded today. There wasn't a camera available at that time, but so many have been recorded today trying to call for their mother as a way to escape the brutality that's been inflicted upon them. So thank you again. The best of luck to you. We'll do our part, and we'll spread the word for you here in our region. Thank you again.
Thank you so much.
The Eclectic is produced by Donnie L. Betts and No Credits Production, LLC. The series is remixed by Maurice Smith. Producers drive to our podcast at Broadway Podcast Network, Spotify, Radio Public, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow us on Facebook at No Credits Production LLC, Instagram, Twitter, at Donnie Betts, or The Eclectic, the podcast. I'm Donnie L. Betts, and special thanks to all our great, great supporters out there.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.